Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. When he came to guest conduct the Philadelphia Orchestra, Maestro Christoph von Dohnányi talked with me about Beethoven's Seventh Symphony.
This symphony is so powerful, and I understand it was received enthusiastically from the moment it was premiered.
Yes, you know, the Beethoven Seventh, compared to the Beethoven Third, for instance, has a total different approach. Beethoven was much more political than people realize nowadays. Most of them just nowadays think it's just a musician, you know, great musician. No, he was also a political, very strong. He had a strong opinion. He loved Napoleon during the Eroica time, during the Third Symphony. And in the Seventh Symphony, which was mainly done in 1812, we know Tchaikovsky, 1812, you know, this was the time of liberty, the time where actually we were short before the Battle of Leipzig, you know, where all the countries came together and fought Napoleon and so on and won finally. So it's about freedom. It's much more about freedom than about dancing, like Wagner said, you know, the Dionysic approach to music. No, it's really, concerning the key, it's actually a very, very strong music in favor of freedom, you know. And actually the second movement, some people take it much too slow for my feeling, the second movement of this symphony, it says Allegretto, which is not a slow motion, and actually it is kind of a march in respect of all the victims which suffered by Napoleon in those days. And we have even remarks by Beethoven concerning this view. He said this himself, that's actually thinking of all the people who suffered under not being free, you know, politically speaking.
Well, it is such a powerful movement, and I understand that at its premiere, people asked for an encore of that movement. How would that work?
That works very easy, and actually it could go on forever because it starts with the same chord as it ended, you know. People will notice we can repeat and we could repeat, you know? So that's very much purposely done by Beethoven, you know.
So he may have even anticipated it standing on its own?
I don't think so, but, you know, they were always very happy if people liked this. So if they clapped, nowadays everybody's shaking their heads once people clap after movement. In those days it was absolutely the habit, you know, and if they loved it, they just clapped.
That's what I wondered. So they would have clapped after the second movement and he would have played
maybe,
it again, maybe?
You know, could be. I mean, we know letters by Mozart after a slow movement, he would have repeated it as written to his father, you know, that it's actually was such a great success, he had to play it again, you know. So people were not so strict about things if they enjoyed it.
Well, it's so beautiful and it seems to lead the listener through all of the parts, the energetic parts, the slow, soulful parts. You feel kind of carried along with it.
Yeah, you better.
You've said that in approaching the great works of the masters who lived centuries ago, you said once you've done a piece many times, you should not think you know it.
I don't think. I mean, why do read people the Bible again and again, you know? The ones who believe in it, and actually there's always something new to discover, and in so to speak eternal works, there's always something which you experience in a new way, in a new time, in a new development of your own personality, and that's the same with music, you know.
If the goal is to find the intention of the composer, and the composer lived long ago, each time you play it, do you discover new things about it?
Yes, you know, actually, if you go in a museum as a young man or a young woman, and then you go 40 years later and watch and look at the same picture, you look at it in a different way. So we, of course, listen and produce Beethoven now in a different way than it was produced in his days. It's still very, very good that many people deal with the tradition of finding out how might it have sounded in those days, you know? But, of course, our life is different, our feeling for speed is different, our feeling for dynamic is different, and the whole approach must be different, but it's always good if you know and if you can speculate about how the intention was, you know. And if you find out, you will find out in different stages of your development, your own artistic development, you will find out that you look at it in a different way, always.
And when you come to Philadelphia, for example, you have an orchestra which has certain strengths and plays in a certain way. Does that influence your interpretation?
Sure, that can influence it, you know. And it's always a mutual approach. Our instrument is the orchestra, and the orchestra sometimes, not always, needs a conductor.
I noticed that the instruments are in a different configuration from the way they sometimes play.
It's the first violin left, second violin on the stage, on the right, you know. So from my point of view, if you look at the public, then of course the first violin is on the right side, and then the second violin is on the left side. The split violins is something which they did in those days. They did it including Gustav Mahler. We have even photos of that, so I never understand why people put it differently, because part of the game of the composition actually is the distribution on stage. You know, where does something sound best? And I mean, having the second behind the first, I think, I mean, for instance, Gustav Mahler in his Ninth Symphony has about 50 or 49 bars. This starting with the second violin, he would never have done it behind the first, you know. So I think one should stick to how the orchestras were located and distributed on the stage in the days when the composition was done, you know.
Talking about how each performance is different, and each time you approach one of these great works, you perhaps discover different things. How has your experience this time been with the Philadelphia Orchestra?
You know, if I would not be able to experience always new things in music, I would stop making music. That's very simple. You know, you have to be always curious to find out something new. And you don't have to look for it. It's just you find things. You don't look for things, you know. It's just it sounds, and the people, and you read the music. That's the main thing. First you read it, and you discover some things which are more important to you maybe than they used to be, or which are less important to you within the piece which it used to be. So in a sense, it must be different. We live, we develop, we get older, pretty old sometimes, you know. So that's a normal development. If you read a book with 15 and you read it again with 60, you read it in a different way.
And you were talking about Beethoven's feeling about politics, and does that resonate today as well?
You know, I'm coming from a family which was very much involved in the resistance against the Nazi system. And actually, since I lived as a child in this situation in Germany, I think more and more how important it is that artists don't disconnect to politics. I think politics is very important for us, and we should be very aware of developments in our social and political structure, and keep our mouths shut if things turn in a way which we don't like.
Well, thank you so much for talking
with us.
You're
certainly welcome. Thank you very much.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.